copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
We come here with a vision of our own, of what we are hoping to see happen. We represent, Corey is a family pastor of a large metropolitan church. And in fact, it would be a mega church in the U.S. And he is, he's been an elder there for many years. And he has really been part of the architecture of what you're going to learn. Darcy and I oversee a ministry called Family Matters, because it really does. It really matters big to God. And our Family Matters, we've been doing what we've been doing for over 30 years with this ministry. We see our vision is to see European families transformed by God into instruments of restoration and reformation. Let me say that again, but I'm going to add a word in there to really temper what I'm saying. We want to see European families transformed by the power of God's grace into instruments of restoration and reformation. Think of those two words. The family's been hit pretty hard in U.S., in Europe. It has been decimated. The role of the father, the role of the mother, what marriage looks like, how we raise children, it's all been so destroyed. And so we want to help use God's grace to help restore what has been lost. And then in the process, through that restoration, create reformation, where these families now become ambassadors of his message and lights in their community, in their schools, and in their churches. And we came here with our primary goal is to personally minister to you for the sake of your personal family. And some of you mentioned that. We desire that out of all this, that if you're married, that this strengthens your marriage. If you're parents, that this strengthens your role as parents or grandparents. And then to the sphere of influence of people that you call your family, even if you're not married, that this really raises your value. A second thing is we came here to frame a theology of family for you. Because I think that that's one of the big missing links in the theological chain. I went to Dallas Seminary for my master's degree, and I went to Western Seminary for my doctor's degree. In both of those seminaries, I studied all kinds of theologies. We had eschatology and pneumatology and soteriology and on and on. I never once studied a theology of family. And all the things that we studied, no one had ever distilled down. What is the Bible? How does it weigh in on this key point of God's plan? We want to show you what that looks like. And then a third thing is we want to help create families within your congregation. So we want to first help you. We want to frame a theology. And then from that, hopefully you can go back to your sphere of influence, and then you can help raise up families within your congregation. Listen to these two words. You're going to hear this a lot. That are guided by God's truth, but tempered by his grace. Does that make sense? That they're guided by his truth, but what you sense when you're around them is his wonderful, gracious heart. And we're going to distill that down to a paper napkin for you. We're going to actually, or you call it serviettes. Serviettes, is that what you call it here? Napkin? Same thing? In other words, when we're done, we want you to be able to go home and take out a napkin at a restaurant and take a pen out and actually draw out for somebody a whole seamless, overarching theology, philosophy of family to help people see a better way. And then our fourth goal is to help you create a grace-based culture within your church or your ministries, because it's hard to get a grace-based culture at home if we don't represent it, and we're going to show you how that works. And then lastly, we hope out of this to identify some of you that really believe that you want to be strong messengers of this, that you feel like the calling that God has given you, the gifting God has given you, the platform he has given you, that you could really help take this message very specifically out and get it to a lot of other people and maybe train other people. And we hope to get to know everybody well. By the way, before we're done, I'm going to bring my camera and I want to take everybody's picture so that when we go back, we can connect. We want to have ongoing connection to you. We might be Skyping with you or get you on the computer and talk with you. We want to be able to know who you are. And we also want to introduce you to our team back in, we're all from, by the way, Scottsdale, Arizona. And Arizona, if you've never been there, Europe is so beautiful. Arizona looks like it was late in the creation week. And God was just kind of getting tired of making stuff or something. And so it's like he ran out of ideas and he just kind of like set off a nuclear bomb in a place and made this barren desert and see if anyone was foolish enough to live there. And we all call it home. And it's a different type, but it's actually a quite beautiful place. So we're from there, but we want, that's our goals. To do that, we want to start by deconstructing where we are as families. Because many times, one of the best ways to try and figure out where we need to go is figure out where we are coming from and maybe what our struggles are right now. Now, I'm going to be speaking, obviously, from the perspective of a person brought up in the U.S. And I realize that sometimes what, from my perspective, it may not relate to where you are. I don't know. Although, as I've studied Europe, I think you guys struggle with the same problems we struggle with there. And frankly, I think you're a bit ahead of us on some of these issues that you're struggling with. But what I'm hoping for and praying for is that God, the Holy Spirit, will take whatever the principles are we're sharing and will help retranslate in your minds to make it relevant to you, even if what I'm saying doesn't make perfect sense. And also, our illustrations may struggle because there's all these cultural differences. I think you're all very smart people, and I'm assuming that you can take even a feeble illustration and turn it into gold for yourself. So let's look at one of the first problems we have that I see in the in families, in European families, American families, is I think we have a tendency to overparent. And we misunderstand because we misunderstand our role as parents. I think a lot of parents miss that. We misunderstand our role, and I think we're encouraged to prioritize, actually over prioritize, a lot of wrong things by overemphasizing things like, for instance, education. Now, as soon as I say that, some of you say, "Did I just hear him say he's concerned about us overemphasizing education?" Yeah, you heard me right. But don't think that I'm against education. I mean, obviously, Dr. Tim Kimmel is talking to you. I obviously believe there's a place, a proper place for taking your brain, harnessing your intellect, and leveraging that to a greater good. Obviously, we want our children to be educated. But the problem is, I think families today make education sovereign. In other words, they put it on a pedestal way up here, higher than it belongs. Education is important, but if anything, it's a B priority compared to an A priority. An A priority would be the number one thing you want to do. Education should not be it. Obviously, education is important, but when we worship it, when we put it on a pedestal, we make it the be-all to end-all, I think we put it way out of... We do a lot of harm. Now, I don't know what it's like in your country, but one of the reasons why education is so emphasized in our country, I think, is we have this term in the U.S. We say, follow the money. You familiar with that term? Follow the money. In other words, why would we do something? Because there's money to be made behind it. There's money to be made in the educational system, convincing all the parents that they need to make education the top priority. And then there's also the assumption, well, if my kids get a good education, they're going to get good jobs, they're going to have, you know, they'll have a better life. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. But many times the motivation is a very temporal financial thing. Those have their place. They shouldn't be A priorities. We're Christians. We see this from an eternal perspective. We should be smarter than this. And yet, our churches are many times filled with people that get this off course. A second thing that I see them overemphasizing is appearance. Beauty. Now, by the way, if we all had pictures of your kids, I think I know something about all of your children or grandchildren already. They're all very pretty. They're all very handsome. You have wonderful looking kids. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with trying to appear the best as you can. There's nothing wrong with that. But once again, we live in a culture that worships beauty. It puts such a high priority on it, and this puts enormous stress on children to compete. And then when you add in Facebook and Instagram and all those other things, and then the media that photoshops all this stuff into an ideal, if we continue to push that pressure on those kids, there's only one direction down for them. I mean, because you know, gravity finds all of us. Age finds all of us eventually, and so we can't fight this. So we see this huge. Let me give you a third thing where I think parents are many times over-prioritizing and over-parenting, and that is in competition and sports. Competition and sports. Now, once again, don't get me wrong. I love sports. Corey played Division I football at Arizona State University. I only played in high school. We're athletes. Gail, you were a cheerleader, weren't you? And so, I mean, we're athletes. We raised a bunch of athletes. Our kids were on teams. We're all for that. And by the way, I'm one of those guys that believe if you're keeping score, play to win. This hogwash that we're all winners out here is ridiculous. I say, no, look at the sign. See, our side, we had a bigger score than you. We won, you lost. I have no problem with competition. And I have no, because I think winning and losing teaches all of us well. And you got to be on both sides of that equation. There's nothing wrong with that. Hopefully you all don't do this in Europe. Do you have things like if they go out and play, you call it football, soccer? Where at the end, everybody gets a trophy? Do you do that? That's how ridiculous it's gotten in America. People feel so bad about hurting some kid's feelings, every kid gets a trophy like they're a champion. And so our kids, they hated this part of the whole thing. And they would, and we'd make them stay because it's, you know, you're supposed to be respectful to your coaches. They'd get their trophy, they'd come home and throw it right in the trash can. They wanted nothing to do with it because it's silly to think that you're afraid that I can't handle coming in second or third or fourth. And sometimes they came in first. But once again, we're overemphasizing it, and we put so much emphasis on people's feelings that we make everybody more fragile than strong. So those three things are areas where I think you see a lot of over-parenting. Let's look at the second one. I think we're encouraged to overparent to compensate for an intimidating culture that leads to fear-based parenting. You're going to hear me say this a lot. Fear-based parenting. Does that resonate with any of you? Do you sense parents where you come from being intimidated by the job of raising their kids, frightened by what's out there? Because we see a lot of frightened parents. But here's what surprises me, is where I see them. I see them in the church. I see people that are coming, bringing their Bible to church, and sitting there worshiping a God who's sitting on the throne of heaven. His own nickname that Jesus gave himself in the book of Revelation, he said, John, write this down. I am the Alpha and the Omega. Now, you know that Alpha and Omega was the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet. That's what they were, the Koine Greek is what it was written in, and that's what he was speaking to John in. And I had a professor in seminary that would translate that verse this way. He said, John, write this down. I'm the God who had the first word, and I'm the one who's going to have the last one. And then he goes on to unpack the whole book of Revelation, which, by the way, looks very frightening. But why did he do it? You read the last chapter. We win. I have the last word. Don't be afraid. In fact, if you took all of the pieces of advice that are given in the Bible, and there's a lot of advice, you can categorize them. And if you categorize them all, do you know that Jesus, that God said in the Bible, don't be afraid more than any other thing? Don't be afraid. And yet, here we have parents that are frightened to death about raising kids. Now, if you ask them why are they afraid, well, they say, I'll tell you why I'm afraid. And then they start rolling out the usual suspects. And those suspects, by the way, are kind of intimidating. They say, well, for crying out loud, I mean, look at the internet. Look at how bad that is, the sewage that's on the internet. And then we have neighbors that they don't know Jesus, and their kids are out of control, and they're not even married, they're living together, or they have drug problems or alcohol problems, and so we have that, and we have a lot of crime in our neighborhood, and on top of that, we didn't come from very healthy homes. Our parents didn't know what they were doing, and so we came into this thing fairly handicapped, so we don't know what we're doing. Yeah, that's frightens us. And then the Bible says Satan's out there. He wants to eat us for lunch. So, yeah, I'm scared. And then what if you were in Ukraine? You say, well, I'm trying to raise my kids here, and everything's falling apart right around me. And many of you have had to deal with war right on your doorstep as you've grown up. So these things, they sound legitimate. And yes, unless you're a person who put your faith in the God of the universe, the God who spoke everything into existence. And so we see fear-based parenting out there. Now, if I start out basically afraid, track with me on this. If I start out afraid, wouldn't it make sense that my strategy for parenting would be designed to accommodate my fears? Are you with me on that? That if I start out here, my starting point, I'm scared, then all of my plans for how I'm going to raise my kid are going to be designed to accommodate my fears. See, right away, we've so undermined our testimony to our kids. It's hard to teach a kid to put their faith in a mighty God when their parents don't believe that mighty God can help them raise kids in the middle of the worst situations and do just fine. But I am convinced that you and God are very capable of raising very strong, very together kids, no matter how bad the culture is around you. In fact, Darcy and I, Corey and Gail, we were all convinced that we not only wanted to raise our kids in the middle of the world, we believed that if we did this properly with God's help, that not only would they survive in the middle of that hostile world, they would thrive. Meaning they would actually make them better and stronger, no matter how bad it got. Now, if I'm a fear-based parent, that one's completely off the table. You with me on this? In other words, I wouldn't even consider that if I'm a fear-based parent. So I basically ask God out of the equation, and I put my own plans. What would be some of the ways I would accommodate my fears as a parent? Well, one thing would be isolating my kids, right? Cloistering. You know that word, cloister? I would put them in a very tightly controlled environment where I'm very careful who their friends are, and we would only have Christian friends, and even those folks would have to go through past my inspection and make sure that they're doing everything right. And I would maybe not want them to be exposed to the internet. I certainly wouldn't want them to be exposed to maybe a public school system. I would maybe not want to have them around television, all that stuff. That would be a way I would maybe accommodate that. I think that's a trap. I think that's a great way to raise a kid that is very susceptible to being just taken out by the world. I think it sends a kid into the future extremely weak. Plus, now what do we do about in Matthew where he says, you are the light of the world. You're the salt of the earth. And he says, don't hide your light under a bushel basket or however it's translated in your Bible. What was he saying here? Don't hide off your light in your own little safe environment, but you hold it up high and put it on a hill where everybody can see it. And so when we're raising kids by fear, all bets are off, if you know that expression, on whether these kids can come out with a heart for God. Because we've already basically taken God out of the equation, and we've communicated to our children that our God isn't big enough to help us raise these good kids in the middle of this. And by the way, fear-based parenting is very prevalent among the Christians in America. I don't know what it's like where you're from, but it's pervasive. So we have to speak up about that. And then I think we all struggle with personal inadequacies, which lead to high control parenting. We have personal inadequacies. Maybe it's our family of origin that we felt like, you know, just didn't give us much of a head start on this. Or maybe we were married before, it didn't go out, well, it didn't turn out very well, and we have a blended family, and everybody has their little issues, and it's struggling. All these things come along, and so we start to overcompensate. And let me tell you some of the standard ways we control. We have a term, have you ever heard the term helicopter parents? You have that over here, helicopter parents? They just hover over those kids. And they're determining everything. Had to referee a fight between a mom and dad at our church. They'd sent their son off to college, to university, several hundred miles away. She was calling him up every morning, waking him up. Hi, honey. Time to get up. She knew exactly what classes he had that day, what papers were due, what quizzes he was going to have or exams he was going to have. She knew exactly how much he had to have had read in his different books that he had been assigned. And she was working him through this thing. And her husband was frustrated with her, but she just thought, well, this is just fine. I was brought into this conversation. Now, by the way, we're ministers. Let me tell you, read the fine print on the ordination certificate. Here's what it says. We are self-appointed overseers of everybody else's business. That's what we do. We mind everybody's business. But that's what we're called to do. And now, obviously, we get invited in. But once we're invited in, you betcha, we'll be glad to weigh in. So I said, now, why would you do this? Why would you call him? Well, because I want to make sure he's up and ready. Well, yeah, but it doesn't make any sense. Well, he's used to it, and I always have him prepared. And so it's so. Well, what if you? Why do you need to call him? So what if you don't call him? Well, I'm afraid he might sleep in. Well, so what? We might miss a class. So what? We might get behind. So what? We might flunk a test. So he might flunk the class. And here, you know what I'm going to say. So what? So what if he does? And she says, so what if he does? Are you crazy? I mean, he would flunk the class. This would be awful. To whom? To you. This isn't about him. This is about you. You're not doing it because you love him. You're doing this because you love you. And you don't want him to do anything that would make you feel bad. You can't. Hey, so if the kid flunks a class, you make him take it over in summer school and pay for it. That's how it's solved. It's not that hard. You tell the kid, if you're helping them through school, you just say, I help you to, as long as you keep your grades at this level. They drop below that, you're on your own. That's what we told our kids. They never drop below those grades. And we didn't call them in the morning. But you see, a lot of, once again, she was a fear-based mother, and she was hovering. How many of you men, any dads here have daughters? How many? Raise your hand if you have a daughter. Okay. Now, have any of you married off any of your daughters yet? You've married. Okay, so you've been with it. Corey and I have done this. You're at the back of a church. She puts her arm through yours, right? And you're going to walk her down the aisle, And there's a young man waiting up there in his nice little outfit. And you're going to take her hand and you're going to put your hand, her hand in his hand, right? Let me ask you a question, dads. Do you want to put your daughter's hand into the hand of a man whose mother woke him up every morning in college? No. I say, first of all, go get a job. Show me you can take care of her. And tell your mother her job, her that role is over. You're taking on life. You get the point. So they get scared. Let me show you some other ways that this plays out. Oh, by the way, have you ever heard of a lawnmower parent? You know what a helicopter parent? Lawnmower parent, they just mow down anything in front of their kids. You know, they're just going to, doesn't care what the damage is, they'll just take them out so that they can protect their kids. And we see that sometimes too. But then I see this happen. Now we're going to start getting real theological here. I see parents, because they have a flawed view of the work of the gospel. Flawed view. In other words, they have a corrupted view of the gospel. They have an incomplete view of the gospel. Does that make sense? In other words, they don't understand what the complete work of Christ did for them on the cross. And so they take the work of Christ and they see that this the whole thing of being saved by God's grace is a wonderful thing. That's our salvation. But then they believe that after that, you have to pay God back. You owe him now. And you have to perform for him. And they put their kids, they distill their role as a Christian parent into getting their kids to behave like a Christian kid. Are you with me on this so far? And so they're really into what we call evangelical behavioral modification. If you're familiar with that psychological term. In other words, what does a nice Christian kid look like? How do they fix their hair? How do they dress? Who do they hang out with? What kind of music did they listen to? What kind of games they play on their computer, all that stuff. What kind of language they use or not use, how kind of friends, all that stuff. And we just get them to look like a great Christian kid. And this is legalism. You're familiar with legalism. We're going to talk about that more in the next section. So they get their kids on a performance basis. And then a second thing, once again, I may use this a couple of times. They really get into what's called we call sin management. Sin management. They believe the role of a parent is to keep their kid from sinning and to keep them from being exposed to sin. Now that sounds like a great idea, except it's absolutely theologically incorrect. It's flawed from start to finish. Say, keep your kid from sinning. You gave birth to a sinner. You're not going to keep this kid from sinning. Your job is to catch him and help correct him and make him rethink that. But as far as sinning, it's innate within our fallen nature. So they think, if I just get my kids to look a certain way, act a certain way, well, I'm doing a good job as a Christian parent. And so they distill the Christian life down to behavior rather than relationship. And this is all, once again, part of a flawed view of the gospel, which we're going to go into more in depth in the next section. Are you with me? Does this make sense so far? Because we think that, I think the Christian movement has really bought into the fact that the Christian life, a mature Christian life, is based on what you know about God. How well you know the Bible. How well you know doctrine. And although we want people to know the Bible, we want our children to know the Bible, we certainly want them to know orthodoxy and good doctrine. The Pharisees knew all that. Remember them? They were some of the smartest theological people out there. But they were nightmares. They missed the memo about relationship and heart connection. They missed that. And so, when we distill the Christian life down to our kids behaving a certain way, looking a certain way, and so forth, and that makes us feel better, everybody gets behind. And then, from there, from overparenting, the next thing there is, I think we underparent. in that we're encouraged to subcontract or outsource our parenting responsibilities to professionals at church or at a Christian school. And this is how we underparent. So we're overdoing certain things. We're underdoing the real thing that we're supposed to be doing, which is being carrying the light of the world and the salt of the earth, carrying the living water in our own homes. And I think, once again, because of a performance-based way we have distilled the Christian life down to, I think a lot of Christian parents just think, well, I've got to have a theological education to be able to do this well. These guys have it. My youth pastor can parse Greek verbs, and he can do Hebrew things, and I'm not even close to that. I'll just let him handle that. And so you can just understand how that would not work out. Just think, let's say a kid came in, and his dad's sitting there reading the paper. He said, "Dad, we've got this new kid in our complex here, and he and I became friends, but you know what? He doesn't believe that Jesus is really God. He says that in that Trinity thing, that whole thing about the Trinity, he says that's not real. That's not real. There's one God, but it's not three in one. And I don't know what to say to him." Now, what if Dad says, "That's a great question to ask your youth pastor"? Then right away, he's communicated to that kid, "This is not important to me. So I'm not going to do it," because he didn't do the work he was supposed to do. And so we need to help parents see the value of all that. Look at the second one there. Second obstacle there is our job as parents is complicated because our culture is antagonistic to our families. One of the ways it's antagonistic is we have a hurried lifestyle. We have a hurried lifestyle, don't we? Now, I don't mean we're in a hurry. I mean we're hurried. What's the difference? When I'm in a hurry, I'm setting the pace. When I'm hurried, other forces are pulling me headlong into the future against my will. By the way, I wrote a book on that called Little House on the Freeway, and it's all about how to get calm into there. And stress and fatigue cause us to default to emotional thinking. So we're not thinking necessarily with our cognitive side, but with our feelings. And we are raising kids in a culture that doesn't recognize moral absolutes. That's been around for a long time, but it does get the best of them. And then there are difficult circumstances to work against us. Maybe you have a blended home or you're a single parent. All these things get... Here's the good news. What we're going to teach you in the next section, start to unpack what grace-based parenting is like, works no matter what your parental situation is. And then the third obstacle is we don't start with a clear and achievable plan. Either we go to one extreme or another, either legalism or license. Legalism is taking your rules and regulations and saying that God set them when he didn't. They're more arbitrary. Or license is not giving them enough guidelines. And so those two things get the best of us.